We all know baseball is a long season. I'm Brett Boone from the Brett Boone Podcast. This summer, take a trip down memory lane with me and hear from the legends of the game. So far this year, I've had conversations with Randy Johnson, Pete Rose, Deion Sanders. Plus, every week we look at the state of Major League Baseball, which teams are exceeding expectations, which ones are struggling to meet them. Follow and listen to the Brett Boone Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Chris and Amy Show, sponsored by the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX Day returns to Busch Stadium May 8th. For details, go to cardinals.com/theme.
Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Amy Marks-Kors and Chris Ranji. We do have Chelsea Handler tickets. We're going to give those away. She's performing October 26th at Stiefel Theater. Tickets to give away today and for the rest of the week. That is happening here. We also want you to know about KMOX Day at the ballpark. Cardinals.com/theme to get that special bobblehead.
And right now, we are honored to welcome in retired Lieutenant General Mark Hertling to discuss the evolution of this conflict between Israel and Hamas. Yesterday, reported that Hamas had agreed to a ceasefire deal that had been brokered by Egypt and Qatar. And Israel said, that's not the deal we helped craft. We also learned that Israel seems to be moving forward into Rafah. And to give us more details is retired Lieutenant General Mark Hertling. General Hertling, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Amy and Chris. It's been too long. How have we been?
It has been too long. We're doing pretty well. Keeping up with the conflict in the Middle East and watching the headlines yesterday, it seemed to be a little bit of confusion regarding this ceasefire deal that Hamas had agreed to. What do we need to know about what was agreed upon and what wasn't?
Well, I think what we've seen, and certainly I haven't seen any of the details of the peace plans specifically, but the indicators were that Israel was at the conference on Friday thinking that they had a deal, a potential deal, and then left it to their secondaries that were there, pulled their folks out. In the meantime, there were some changes to the deal with some language. I've heard different stories about what that language was. One of the things that evidently was said that was to Hamas's favor, that this would be more than a ceasefire. It would be a continuation of calm, which, depending on how you determine the language, could mean an end of the conflict. And Israel is in no way going to agree to that because of the remaining Hamas terrorist fighters and organizational effectiveness they have within the southern part of Gaza. So when the Qataris and the Egyptians claimed that Hamas had agreed to the peace deal, it was not the same peace deal that Israel had agreed to. So that caused some confusion over the weekend. In addition to that, what happened is on Sunday, there was a rocket attack by Hamas from one of the checkpoints to another that killed four Israeli soldiers. And I think that really torqued up the Israeli government quite a bit, that as they were continuing a peace process, that there were still attacks on their military. There were more of those rocket launches this morning, by the way, after Israel said that they would not abide by what Hamas thought was in the peace deal. So a lot of confusion. CIA Director Burns is still in the area shuttling between Qatar and Israel. And I think it's just basically a miscommunication between different governments. But anything that would say that Israel can't continue their operation to destroy the infrastructure and the operational command and control structure of Hamas would be a no-go for the Israelis.
So there is a special concern with whatever operation the Israelis decide they're going to commence in Rafah because of the amount of people who are there and seemingly nowhere else to go and already having difficulty in getting humanitarian aid to them. Is it, how can Israel, how can the IDF make that whole situation less, I guess, deadly? Well, what can they do there? It doesn't seem like there's much they can do to limit the amount of casualties.
Yeah, Chris, it is an urban environment. And if you've talked to any soldiers that have ever fought in an urban environment, when you're trying to get civilians, quote, out of the way, which is what military folks want to do, they want to go after the combatants as opposed to the civilians. It's very challenging in an urban environment like Rafah is. And in fact, it's like all of Gaza is. But the other factors are Israel has dropped leaflets on eastern Rafah. The town of Rafah is divided up into several parts. They see some operational headquarters of Hamas in eastern Rafah. They've also detected some missiles and rockets being launched from that area. There's also been direct attacks against the IDF. So they see eastern part of Rafah as being the big contentious area, and that's where they've stated they want to go into. Now, they dropped leaflets on that area over the weekend telling citizens to move out. There are two other camps that they've set up. There's one at a place called Al-Mawasi. This is just northwest of Rafah. It's not a very large area, but Israel has established tents and humanitarian facilities in that area. They've also told them to go to the western side of Rafah. So Israel is attempting to limit their operations into that eastern part. As far as the humanitarian aid situation goes, there's been a lot of commentary about this from the very beginning of the war, and it's been a start and stop operation. It's very hard to get humanitarian aid into Gaza because of the smuggling of some equipment and the fact that Gaza does not have any security forces to provide help in the distribution of that aid. Within the next couple of days, the pier system that the United States Navy and Army have developed and are putting in on the Mediterranean Sea will be operational, I would say probably by the end of this week. With that in operation, it's what's called a ro-ro ship, a roll-on, roll-off ship. They'll be able to start pushing probably between 100 to 150 trucks of aid into the area with help in terms of distribution. There's also the northern entry points of Gaza that have been opened up. And in fact, the other day I saw a report saying that there was too much aid coming into the north that they couldn't distribute it effectively. So the aid part is actually getting better. It is a humanitarian crisis. There's no doubt about that when you're talking about bombing an area. But you have to remember that the areas where Israel has been bombed or has been bombing are facilities that Hamas is using to their advantage. Part of their strategy in Hamas is to use time as a strategic advantage, but also use tunnels that are subterranean to facilities like hospitals and mosques and residential areas. Hamas wants civilians to be injured because it reflects negatively on Israel. Unfortunately, Israel has not done a good job in countering that, but both sides I think Hamas is more to blame for the civilian casualties than, in fact, Israel is.
General Hertling, you mentioned the four IDF soldiers that were killed by rockets fired by Hamas from Rafah. And that was, I believe you're talking about that Kerem Shalom crossing where they were trying to get aid. Joe Biden, the president, and the U.S. had told Israel, begged Israel to open up that crossing. They did on December 17th. And trying to get aid through that crossing, they were hit by missiles from Hamas.
Right.
In that situation. Oh, go ahead.
No, that you're exactly right. And that's the rest of the story. And I'm glad you're bringing that up, Amy. The reason the crossings at Rafah and Kerem Shalom have been closed is because Hamas has continued to shoot rockets and missiles at those crossings to disrupt aid. They don't want the aid coming in because it continues to give Israel and the United States, in fact, a black eye in this situation. The more Hamas can make Israel the villain in this, they will do so. That is part of any terrorist group's strategy. And truthfully, I've experienced the same thing with Al-Qaeda and ISIS in some of the wars I've fought. They want to show the military force of their enemy as the bad guy in every situation they can. And you bring up the rocketing of those two crossing points is a very good issue to remember that Hamas is not helping the humanitarian aid toward the Palestinian citizens.
From a military perspective, is it even possible to completely eradicate a terrorist organization like Hamas?
No. And Chris, I've said that from the very beginning. It is not possible to eradicate the ideology of a terrorist organization. And in fact, there's a lot of studies that show whenever you conduct operations against these kind of groups, there is a potential for them recruiting more people to stand against, in this case, Israel in Iraq and Afghanistan, to stand against the United States. That is part of their strategy. But you do have to kill, and I say this hesitantly, you can't destroy the ideology, but you do have to go after those who are conducting the terrorist act, the killers. You do have to kill them or capture them.
General Hertling, what about the American hostages that are still believed to be held by Hamas?
Well, and that's part of, I mentioned earlier, Amy, that Hamas is using the strategy of time and tunnels to their advantage. They've deployed these tunnels specifically to cause Israel pain when they go in and try and destroy them. The other thing they're employing is time. And that's what you're talking about with the release of the hostages. What we've seen over the last almost 8 months now is a bunch of attempts to get the hostages out, but every one of those attempts have been thwarted by Hamas. I will put the blame on them. You know, when Israel is determining the peace, the subjects of the peace process, the return and release of either the hostages or the hostages' remains have always been the number one priority. And we've seen in every instance, Hamas has backed away from those peace agreements. I personally don't think that there's that many hostages alive. That's a horrible thing to say, but it's been 8 months now. And the proof of life has not been shown. That's something you always look for when you're trying to negotiate for hostages. Show us who's there. Give us a film of them. Tell us what they're doing today. Haven't seen any of that from Hamas that I know of. There may be some out there that the Israelis have seen, but there hasn't been a proof of life. And that just tells me that Hamas knows the situation they would be in if they agreed to the peace deal and promised hostages. And in fact, the first third of the peace deal, the first 6 weeks allegedly, is returning women and children or their remains. You can imagine what the population of Israel, how they will react if when it comes time to return women and children, that there's not a whole lot of women and children to be returned.
While we have you, General, wanted to at least get your thoughts on what's happening with Ukraine and the aid that has been now set aside for them. They have been asking for it for months. It is finally coming their way. And all of this is happening now against the backdrop of the news we got this morning that a couple of Ukrainian officers were arrested for plotting to kidnap and assassinate Volodymyr Zelensky. So that happened today. What do you make of everything that's going on there now?
Yeah, I saw that report on the two colonels that allegedly were plotting to kidnap or kill President Zelensky. And, this is hard to say, Chris, but those things go on a lot in war. Well, not a lot, but they go on more than most people know, that there are traitors, there are those who will commit these kind of crimes, and especially in a society that like Ukraine, where there is an element of the society that is still connected to Russia. So if you can recruit individuals like this, it would go after a president, would kill them. And that's what I think Russia is trying to do to continue to divide Ukraine, and especially divide Ukraine from the West. That's what Russia is attempting to do. That does not mean by any stretch of the imagination that there's a faction of Ukraine that is countering President Zelensky and the way he's conducting this war. It just happens to be that this is the Russian way of doing business, to conduct people that will conduct assassinations like this. Going to your question in terms of the state of the war, what I've said is that, you know, thank goodness the Congress finally voted after 7 months of stalling, which is just horrific, on the aid going to Ukraine. They are a great ally. They are a good partner. As you know, I've worked with them for several months in my last job as the commander of U.S. forces in Europe. And it is just a different society than what you see in Russia. But after 7 months of a lack of aid, their supply chains are broken. What we'll probably see within the next weeks and possibly even months is a reestablishment of the defensive lines. We're already starting to see a little bit of that, but they were hurting for a good couple of weeks. They were running out of ammunition and their front lines were broken in several places. But once those supplies can get reinstituted inside the country and push forward through a supply chain to the key places that need them, I think the effort right now, probably for the next, I don't know, 4 to 6 months, that's just my best guess, is to reestablish the front lines in a very good defensive posture. And then you'll see as more aid is delivered and it gets to the frontline units, to include some of the more lethal aid that is coming with now that the decision has been made to provide attack and missiles, and the Ukrainian Air Force has been trained over the last several months on the use of F-16s. I think you'll see probably offensive operations probably in the fall and possibly in the early winter of 2025. But the fight will continue, in my belief.
That is retired Lieutenant General Mark Hertling. You've seen him frequently as a national security and military analyst on CNN. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. General Hertling, thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, you're welcome, Amy, but you forgot to say that I'm a proud CBC grad.
That's right. The pride CBC. Of St. Louis. Hey, yeah. I've got a CBC coffee cup right now in my hand.
There you go.
In your honor.
Hey, thanks for calling me, guys. You have a great day, and let's hope the Cardinals start winning, okay?
They need to bring you in. Give them some strategy.
Thanks, General.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's General Mark Hertling. He's the best. He really is very good and insightful. We're very late for break, but it's okay because we love that guy. He's fantastic.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time? Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.